Hi, I'm Adam Rabin.
And I'm Greg Skillman.
We've been writing songs together for almost 30 years, and there's even a chance you may have heard one of them.
And after all this time, we thought we'd look back and try to make sense of our collaborations and figure out what they mean to us now.
We'll be sharing interesting behind-the-scenes insight about the songs, answering your questions,
and challenging each other to a round of incisive and cutting questions. And if you think that's what's actually about to happen, then, well, welcome to Whale Helmet.
Today we'll be talking about my head. Not simply my head, not simply Greg's head, but the song called My Head, which was from Mailbox's very first CD, Chameleon in a Kaleidoscope, back from 1996.
Your major label debut.
My major label debut. Major label being self-released.
Super Pickle.
Super Pickle. That's right. Super Pickle was my label. Yes, I forgot all about that. How that's shameful that I forgot about Super Pickle. What I was going to say is self-released is like the biggest label ever because like everybody is on that.
Everybody's on there, yeah.
Everybody's on. I've seen so many albums put out, so many great albums put out by self-released. And like so many of the other songs, or just about all the songs on this podcast, I wrote the music, you wrote the lyrics.
10-4.
10-4. And this is a perfect like collaboration because it needed to happen, and so it did. So before we get into the whole picking it apart and putting it back together, we should listen to it. And I got to warn you, listeners, don't blink or you'll miss it. It's a minute and a half of My Head.
My God's scared. What will make me beat? What will make me beat? My head gave in and my mouth got scared. My mouth got scared. What else can I say? What else can I say? My head gave in and my ears got scared. My ears got scared. My head caved in and my appendix got scared. My appendix got scared. What am I doing here anyway? What am I doing here anyway? I put my head full again, and my body parts chilled, and my body parts chilled, and everyone got cocky again, and everyone got cocky again.
So there you go, My Head.
My
from
head.
Mailbox. My, your head?
My head.
Your head.
That's my head you're talking about, sir.
All right, so let's just talk about that then. So I'm the one singing My Head, but it's really your head because it's your lyrics. That's that weird relationship that singers have with their lyricists. I'm sure Elton John has sung things that came out of Bernie Taupin's mind and Geddy Lee out of, you know, from Neil Peart's mind.
Well, I know that you were thinking these things and you couldn't figure out a way to put them on paper, and I hadn't met you yet. So It was like a psychic futuristic brain scan that I did. No, I have no idea.
It was a prognosticated lyric. So you wrote this before we even met, you think?
Yeah, I'm remembering a security guard shack in somewhere in Fort Lauderdale about 2 a.m.
You used to work as a security guard.
Yeah.
Like at all different places around South Florida.
Yeah, I was a night security guard, and I'll tell you right now, I was horrible. I
know. I used to come visit you, and we'd play Scrabble all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It was really I got paid for nothing, and I did nothing, so it was all good.
So maybe you were a perfect security guard, nighttime security guard.
Hey, you know, I didn't write the manual. I just acted on it.
There you go.
So I'm remembering a guard shack at like 2 a.m. writing stuff, and I think this came out of one of those frenzied nighttime sessions when I was hiding from the world.
You've did all kinds of creative stuff at that job, as I recall. You did a lot of writing.
Yeah, yeah. I did. I brought my guitar a lot. I would run scales at night, write music, or rehearse for whatever band I was in. So I was basically getting paid less than $5 an hour to be a musician full time.
So these people with these multi-million-dollar buildings with all this fancy equipment in it had a guy protecting the whole thing for 8 hours a night at $5 an hour.
No, I don't look back at that going, yeah, I was a really super, super conscientious citizen at that time. It was pretty much the philosophy of the rat back then. It was like you took what you could get.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was cool. I was in a boy band, I guess. I was wearing a uniform every time that I went to go play music professionally at a guard shack in the middle of the night and nowhere. But yeah,
I've played to less. Yeah, I think we all have.
I played to people driving by 441 in Miami.
Oh, my goodness.
Outside doing Zappa covers.
So my head. So where do you think that those lyrics came from? What was going through your head?
Well, they were genuine fears.
Yeah.
I thought if my head caved in, what would, be the natural results? And, my heart would get scared, certainly, because the autonomic nervous system controls the heartbeat. So if the head cave in and the brain stops working, then the heart will have to stop beating. And that's not a cool situation for the heart. So the heart has its best interest in mind. And he's saying, what will make me beat? What is my, who's going to take care of me? When am I going to get mine?
Right. Who's taking care of me? Who's leading me?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So they rise up.
And then your mouth got scared.
My mouth got scared.
Your math gets, what else can I say?
What else can I say? Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why.
Sounds like acceptance.
Well, I'm saying to you that my mouth got scared. What else can I say about that? If it's like, if I start.
Speaks for itself.
It my mouth does. And if I start trying to explain it to you, then it's going to take over and just like shut the hell up.
Then my ears got scared.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
No, actually, you see, when the brain caves in, the speech centers go away, so there is nothing else you can say. And also, of course, the auditory processing systems will also be eliminated, so you can't be hearing nothing at that point. So it's a very bad situation to find yourself in.
So it reminds me of that old joke, if a tree falls on your head, does it make a sound?
I have a better one.
Go for it.
Which is, if a tree falls on a florist, and there's no one there to hear it, did he make a noise?
So sometimes writing lyrics can be therapeutics, kind of a self-therapy.
All of that's getting cut.
None of it's getting cut.
Yeah. It's definitely therapy. You got to deal with your fears. You got to deal with the things that are facing you every day, and you have to find a way to hash through that. Some people just take an axe and go for it, and some of us take instruments and pens and stuff.
And half the time we don't even know what we're doing on the page until we're done jotting it all out.
Yeah. If you know where you're going with the lyric when you start, I'm not going to say that because it's
rare. It's rare that it's rare, works. Yeah. I've sat down knowing I want to write a song about this. It's very rare that I can follow that through because within like three or four lines, you've already started to build something else. It's very likely that you've started to highlight or emphasize a certain aspect that you didn't think you were going to. And then that becomes the lyric.
Yeah, it's kind of the fractal nature of the unfolding of the idea.
Oh, well put. Yeah, the fractal nature of it. And the key that I have found is that because there's that combination of discipline and inspiration, the magic and the labor. And you got to sit down, you got to start writing those first few lines. And if you do start going off in a different direction, that's when you can loosen the reins on the discipline and say, let's see where this goes. Forget what you thought you were about to do. Got to go where you almost have to be like open-minded about yourself from 2 minutes ago when you started writing something.
That's an interesting idea, being vulnerable with yourself.
because when we start writing, there's a certain pride to writing, there's a certain pride to creation. You know, you finish writing something, you finish making something, you're proud of it. But during the entire process, it's not like 1 second it's here, 1 second the thing, you know, 1 second the thing isn't here, and the next second it is. It's more like anything that you create it in steps, a series of tons of microscopic steps.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be vulnerable enough to say, okay, where I thought I was going, that pride I have in the first two lines I wrote, maybe I shouldn't be so proud of, because this third and fourth and fifth line makes me think of something else.
Yeah.
There's kind of a meditative aspect to it, which is what you're doing this absolute instant is really the most important thing, not what you were doing 2 seconds ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those first couple lines kind of act as the packaging for what's to come. And, you know, once the box looks kind of pretty and you're kind of interested, you open it up, you're like, oh my God, look what's inside here. And that box is in recycling and you're messing with this whole new thing.
And the thing inside keeps changing.
Yeah.
It's Schrodinger's lyric. You don't know what that lyric is until you open the box. And then even when, but you know,
but you have
I don't know if that.
But you have to create the box first is the problem.
So it's a Mobius, it's a Mobius Schrodinger's cat.
We did it.
We did it. Mobius Schrodinger's cat.
The next Mahout album title just happened.
Awesome. Awesome. I'll jot that down. Oh, right. So the next part of the song is my appendix got scared. What am I doing here anyway?
Well, you know.
What am I doing here?
Well, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's vestigial. It can be removed without, you know, much impact to the host body.
It's almost like, so that's like that stage of grief where you're bargaining. It's the bargaining stage. It's like, okay, I'll give you my appendix.
If it
wasn't that important to begin with.
Okay. If we were taking this lyric into the, okay, let's just quit fucking around. It's a political allegory, and the head caving in is of course, you know, the state coming to an end. And mm-hmm. the chaos that would ensue, and the appendix in this this allegory would be the marginal people that are off to the side that people think, you know, we're not considering them in the solution.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then the final verse, the final lines are really cap the whole thing off mm-hmm. in a brilliant way. It totally offsets, if not undoes. The previous four, which is, I puffed my head full again and my body parts chilled.
Mm-hmm.
And my body parts chilled.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone got cocky again.
That's right. As soon as the imminent danger is over, you return to your selfish ways.
Each and every time.
Every time. It's a recurring theme. It's a big part of Mousetrap from Elephants of Scotland.
Huh.
Yeah, the notion that you can overcome your oppressor. And as soon as you do, you become the oppressor. And it's also in this way where you have, you know, you're rebelling against a situation that's happened. And when you get your way, you know, you return to being the jerk off, I guess.
And then you end up right back and then you sing the song, almost like the song should be on a constant loop. Because at some point you're going to get too cocky and then it's all going to fall apart again and your head will cave in again.
Yeah, it's an allegory to how this country handles tragedy. You know, we all join hands for a while when horrible things happen. Then a little while later, we're all back to, you know, pushing each other in the back of the line because you're not the same kind of person that I am, you know. It's like, it seems like we never learned that lesson for good. We get glimmers of what it can look like when the sky is falling, but when the sky is clear, for some reason, we just like being assholes, and I don't get it.
I guess it's like the flip side of what I was saying earlier, which is almost like we've achieved the evil side of Zen, which is all that matters is right now. So if right now everything's good, then everything's good.
Yeah, Yeah, the zen of the selfish moment. Absolutely. You're feeling one with yourself, not the universe.
Mm.
And that's the best best you can hope for.
And it's a big difference, too.
Yeah.
So this is not a literal... See, you wrote the song before we met, and also before we met, in 2 years, almost a year and a half, 2 years before we met, I got in a car accident and severely damaged my head.
That's right.
My head, in a sense, did cave in. I wouldn't say I got scared, because I was out cold for like 2 days before I even came back to consciousness. But I always got a kick out of singing the song because, you know, I got these huge scars on my head from being in a car accident. And it was like, my head caved in and my heart got scared. Yeah. So there's like, you didn't know it at the time, but I've always had like a very personal affinity for the song because I felt like it kind of was about me, even though obviously it couldn't have been.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about last time about broadcasting.
So you wanted me to get into a car accident,
or what you're saying. Or you wanted me to write a song about it.
Oh, so meeting you was what I was... No, wait, what?
You got into the car accident so I could write this song, but I didn't know you at the time, so it was a broadcast. And I picked up the broadcast down there in North Fort Lauderdale, and I started writing My Head. And then when we met later, it was like, oh, yeah, this is the whole, yeah, we started. This is how it started. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. It's like telepathic prognostication. One of the notes I made for myself that I wanted to bring up to you is how anxiety, because that's like kind of the tone of the song. It's not simply the tone of the lyrics, but I think the tone of the music, there's a kind of an anxious, manic nature to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that anxiety, it's literally the spark, the engine, is our own anxiety and neuroses is what gets us to set pen to paper.
Yeah, anxiety is a muse. I actually had a saying at that time, stress is my yoga. I even had a shirt made that said that.
You did have a shirt?
Yeah, I had a shirt that said, stress is my yoga. It had a skeleton in the lotus position on it. Donna had it made for me, but
that's brilliant. Because right, so like, if we were completely content and zen and totally, you know, chill, if our body parts chilled, we probably wouldn't feel the need to write music. We wouldn't write this kind of music. We wouldn't write this. Certainly not this hyperactive hillbilly, like heavy metal thing that I wrote under it. That definitely came from a place of anxiety. I think even the composition of the notes and the tempo.
Yeah, there's definitely there's a lot of tension to the song, and if you stop and go with those lyrics for a minute, it's a scary song.
It fits.
But what you did to it musically, and this is actually what I wanted to bring up with you about it, was this was released in 96. You and I met in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, you know, we shared an awful lot of music and things we liked and stuff. But the one thing that I always had going on was the Meat Puppets. You know, they're my Beatles. Yes.
Absolutely.
And Kirkwood's guitar playing is what really got me to start playing. And the freedom they had with their lyric writing and how I could always make it add up to something that made sense to me. And that's all that matters, is that if somebody can grab and go, all right, I got something out of that. It doesn't matter what it is. Like whatever they put in there, it didn't matter. It's what you get out of it.
Yeah.
And they taught me.
I totally get, yeah. Having gotten to know you, I totally get what you got out of the Meat Puppets style, out of their oeuvre.
The oeuvre.
You definitely turned me on to them. I think I had heard Get On Down was probably like the only thing I had ever heard by them before I met you. And that's, you know, it's definitely indicative of their sound, but it was just kind of like, oh, I heard that once or twice. And then just kind of like passed through my head, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you started laying a few of their albums on me. Mirage. I know I listened to Mirage a bunch, and I think I borrowed that from you because I had listened to Get On Down. And I know that Too High to Die came out right a few years before 96. Yeah, so that probably, those two albums, and I feel like there's like, Forbidden Places, right? How could I forget that?
Yeah, now, yeah, that's actually very similar to the riff from Sam. Yes.
Yeah, well, speaking of Sam, so like on the same album, on the same Mailbox album, you got the first track, San Antonio, West Virginia Energy Malaprop Incident.
Right.
Which is the opening track, and you, I mean, there's no secret that I was definitely influenced by Sam. And I almost dare say this about Meat Puppets, but there's almost a progressive rock element in the intense musicianship that they brought.
Yeah, they wouldn't mind that. I don't think they would mind that at all.
No, no. So definitely. And you know what? Here's the other thing. It wasn't simply Meat Puppets influencing my writing that music. And this I know for sure, because I, now that you mentioned it, I know I've had this thought. But your love of the Meat Puppets and my understanding of the Meat Puppets influenced my writing when I was approaching one of your lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So when I, so for San Antonio, for My Head, and I'm sure I could probably pick a few others, I would think, okay, I want to make sure Greg likes what I've done to his music, to his words. I want to make sure he likes it. So, or maybe I'm just channeling you. I was like, okay, what was going through Greg's mind when he was humming or reading these lyrics back to himself for the first time? So if some of that sounds like Meat Puppets, you're welcome.
Good job, sir. Good job.
I actually wrote the song in 1994, and I made my first demo of it like probably that same day, because, you know, it's really interesting to listen back to those old tapes and say, it kind of was I naive? Was I bold? Did I just not care? Did I truly not care? I don't know what the answer to that is.
It was trial and error. You know, as I recall, the number of tapes you had released prior to Chameleon, dozens.
Yes, it's true. I was putting out an album every few months on a cassette. Yeah.
And that's how you built your 10,000 hours of mastery for getting an idea from Spark in the Head to a tape somebody else can listen to in a startling amount of time. And that was you as the Beatles playing at that burlesque place in Berlin for 8 months. Like that's why you're as good as you are.
Well, thank you. It's that, these were steps. These were steps along the way.
Shit that happened, good memories, and have a beer.
Is there anything else we should bring up?
Just that if your head does cave in, please call 911 immediately.
Yes. We don't want any of our listeners to think that you should pick up a guitar and worry about like your appendix. Don't worry about, you know, what's going to happen after it. And certainly don't get cocky again. Call 911 and say, my head caved in.
Yeah. Once it's in there, you might have to have somebody else do it, but seek help immediately. And then when you're done, let us know about your experience and we'll send you a free copy of the song.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of, let's say it together,
Helmet.
I've been Adam Rabin.
I've been Greg Skillman.
And this has been My Head. What should we go out with? I threw out a few songs that we could go out with, but what do you think? Maybe I'll play the demo. Maybe I'll play the old 1994 demo and let people hear the rough version of My Head.
I don't think your collection of our music is complete without it. Yeah. Roll it.
Okay. You've been listening to Whale Hummit. You can follow us at imadeitup.com or on Facebook if you find Adam Rabin, Elephants of Scotland, blah, 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 blah. See you next time. This is My Head, 1994 demo. Take care.
Peace.
My head caved in and my heart got scared. My heart got scared. What will make me beat? What will make me beat? My head caved in and my mouth got scared. My mouth got scared. What else can I say? What else can I say? My head caved in and my ears got scared. My ears got scared.
Hello. 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 My head caved in and my appendix got scared. My appendix got scared. What am I doing here anyway? What am I doing here anyway? Pop off my head full again. And my body parts chilled. And my body parts chilled. And everyone got cocky again. And everyone got cocky again.